Of all the lines of Barry's that still hang in the memory, probably the one that certainly children remember best is Peter's "To die will be an awfully big adventure" from Peter Pan. His own writing suggests, the diaries that Andrew Birkin has used in this series, that he was able to write down his own thoughts about life and death with a great deal more freedom than most people of his generation. There wasn't that kind of Victorian reticence which you very often find in particularly Scott's writers of that time. Was he therefore openly a very emotional man? Did he laugh and cry more easily than most of his time?
I wouldn't have thought more than most. I can't remember him crying at all, although he laughed a very great deal. It would never be a loud sort of ha-ha. It'd be much more a sort of shaking of the shoulders. Of course, he was a man of tremendous moods, and there were plenty of times when, say, I was living at the flat with him and I'd asked a friend of mine to come and have a meal. I'd sort of pray hard that Uncle Jim would be in one of his good moods rather than in one of his bad moods, because when he was in a bad mood, he could sit in absolute and utter silence for an hour or two, not address a word, be quite unaware anybody was in the room. In his good moods, he'd never stop making us all laugh, and you couldn't tell which was going to happen. So people could get the impression that he was a lonely, sad man. He often was just that, but so very much more often. In my opinion, he was 8/10, shall we say, full of humour, and 2/10 full of gloom.
And of course, there was so much death around him, not only in his writing, but also in his friendships. The two elder brothers of yours, who were closest to him, both, I think, died very young indeed.
Yes, I think, well, George, my eldest brother, he was killed in March 1915, just after his 21st birthday. I think probably he was the one who was closest of all, until, naturally enough, he died. After which, Michael, the one next to me, became his most loved, and then he was drowned just before his 21st birthday, which I think really was a shock from which Uncle Jim never properly recovered. He more or less died then, although he lived for another 15 or 16 years, but the light of his life went out when Michael died.
Did Barry think that Michael's death was suicide?
He never talked to me about it. I shouldn't think he did. You see, he could never swim. I don't know. It's one of these mysteries. I don't think there's any reason to think it was suicide. Michael and I used to live with Uncle Jim in his flat in the Adelphi. And Michael having gone, I stayed on and lived there alone with Barry for the next 5 years.
Did you and Peter Davis therefore have to replace George and Michael? Was there a feeling that you had to take over from them as the two favourite sons?
I would say such a feeling never occurred. It was automatic. We were both very devoted to him, and every now and then one would say, it's time we saw Uncle Jim. But we never felt we were replacing any of our brothers.
Was there ever a feeling that all the things he did with you as boys, the holidays, the adventures, the days you spent together, were really material for him, that he was always going to use it somehow in one of the plays or one of the stories?
I think the reverse. I would think he would have all these holidays and have all these times with us with no ulterior thought, but certain moments would come when we were together which would strike him as being very good ideas, and he'd jot them down in a notebook, and they would all appear in a play or a book or whatever it may be.
Did he seem, by the end of his life, ready for death himself, a man who'd written so much about it, thought so much about it, been so obsessed by ghosts and by returns from the grave? How did he view his own death?
It's a very difficult question to answer that. Although I sat with him while he was dying, I think he was tired. Wanted to go.
It's been 40 years now since Barry died, and though there have been countless books and articles about him by others, Mico Davis has until now always declined to write or talk about his adoptive uncle. Was he perhaps not aware at the time that the man he knew and loved as Uncle Jim was for many people the most distinguished playwright of his period?
I don't quite honestly think the thought ever crossed my mind. Whenever, shall we say, I had a cold and was lying in bed, Uncle Jim used to come up and sit on the bed and say, "How bad's your cold?" And I probably wouldn't give him much information. And he said, "Of course I'm luckier than you, because I can always tell how bad my cold's going to be." And so I'd say, how can you tell that?" He said, "Well, you see, I've got a false tooth. And every time I sneeze, the tooth comes out. And if it hits the bottom of the bed, it's going to be a moderately easy cold. But if it crashes into the wall the other side of the bed, it's going to be a very bad cold." That always used to amuse me very much. There are so very many memories. I don't know. Perhaps I go back a good long way to my age 10 and 11 and 12, walking round the Round Pond with my hand in Uncle Jim's hand. And he'd be telling me stories. Or alternately, I'd be doing a holiday task, Stevenson's The Black Arrow, and Barry would have written out in his minute handwriting something like 100 questions, and would ask me as you walk round and round the Round Pond each question, with the obvious and hopeful result that I won the prize.
That reminiscence of J.M. Barrie was by Nicholas Llewellyn Davis, who was talking to Sheridan Morley. The Lost Boys by Andrew Birkin begins on BBC Two on the 11th of October at 25 past nine. And there's an article about J.M. Barrie and his friendship with the Llewellyn Davises by Daphne du Maurier in the current issue of Radio Times. The article's called Sylvia's Boys.